slackened from horror to deep, silent sleep, and she slumped into her chair. I let out my breath as a spell took hold and bowed my head, trembling. I reached out and stroked my hand over Murphy's hair. Then I composed her into something that looked a little more comfortable. "Down where there's no dreams," I whispered to her. "Just rest, Murphy. I'll nail this thing for you." With an effort of will, I smudged the circle and broke it. Then I stepped outside it, used the chalk to close it again, and willed it closed around Murphy. I had to strain this time, more than I'd ever needed to since I was barely more than a child. But the circle closed around her, sealing her in. A small haze, only an inch or two high, danced around the chalk lines like heat waves rising from summer roads. The circle would keep out anything from the never-never, and the enchanted sleep would hold until dawn came, keeping her from dreaming and giving the nightmare away to further harm her. I shambled out of her office to the nearest phone. Rudolph watched me. Stallings wasn't in evidence. I dialed Michael's number. It was still busy. I wanted to crawl home and drop a sleep spell on myself. I wanted to hide somewhere warm and quiet and get some rest. But the nightmare was still out there. It was still after its vengeance. After Michael. I had to get it, find it, stop it. Or at least warn him. I put the phone down and started gathering my stuff together. Someone touched my shoulder. I looked up at Rudolph. He looked uncertain, pale. "You'd better not be a fake, Dresden," he said quietly. "I'm not really sure what's going on here, but so help me God, if something happens to the lieutenant because of you." I studied his face numbly and then nodded. "I'll call back for Stallings. I need that book." Rudolph's expression was serious, earnest. He'd never much liked me anyway. "I mean it, Dresden. If you let Murphy get hurt, I'll kill you." "Kid, if anything happens to Murphy because of me," I sighed, "I think I'd let you." Chapter 20. I wouldn't have thought you could find a peaceful suburbanish neighborhood in the city of Chicago. Michael had managed, not too far west of Wrigley Field. Ancient old trees lined either side of the street in stately splendor. The homes were mostly old Victorian affairs, restored after a fluctuating economy and a century of wear and tear had reduced them to trembling fire traps. Michael's house looked like it was made out of gingerbread. Fancy trim, elegant paint in ivory and burgundy, and perhaps inevitably a white picket fence around the house and its front yard. The porch light cast a circle of white radiance out into the front lawn, almost to the edge of the property. I slowed the Beetle up onto the curb in front of the house and pushed my way through the swinging gate, clomping up the stairs to rattle the knocker against the front door. I figured that it would take Michael a minute to stagger out of bed and come downstairs, but instead I heard a thump, a pair of long steps, and then the curtains of the window beside the door stirred. A second later, the door opened and Michael stood there, blinking sleep out of his eyes. He wore a pair of jeans and a t-shirt with John 3:16 on his chest. He held one of his kids in his brawny arms, one I hadn't seen yet, maybe a year old, with a patch of curly golden hair, her face pressed against her daddy's chest as she slept. "Harry," Michael said, his eyes widened. "Merciful Father, what's happened to you?" "It's been a long night," I said. "Have I been here yet?" Michael peered at me. "I'm not sure what you mean, Harry." "Good, then I haven't. Michael, you've got to wake your family up. Now. They could be in danger." He blinked at me again. "Harry, it's late. What on earth? Just listen." In terse terms, I outlined what I'd learned about the nightmare and how it was getting to its victims. Michael stared at me for a minute. Then he said, "Let me get this straight. The ghost of a demon I killed 2 months ago is rampaging around Chicago, getting into people's dreams and eating their minds from the inside." "Yeah," I said. "And now it's taken a part of you, manifested a body that looks like you, and you think it's coming here." "Yes," I said. Michael pursed his lips for a moment. "Then how do I know that you're not this nightmare, trying to get me to invite you in?" I opened my mouth, closed it again, then said, "Either way, it's better if I stay out here. Charity would probably gouge my eyes out for showing up at this hour." Michael nodded. Come on in, Harry. Let me put the baby to bed. I stepped inside into the small entry hall with a polished hardwood floor. Michael nodded toward his living room to the right and said, Sit down, I'll be back in a second. Michael, I said, you should wake your family up. You said this thing was in a solid body, right? It was a few minutes ago. Then it's not in the Never Never. It's here in Chicago. It can't get into people's dreams from here. I don't think so, but... And it's going to be after people who were near it when it died. It's going to come after me. I chewed my lip for a second. Then I said, It's got part of me in it, too. Michael frowned at me. If I was going to come after you, Michael, I said, I wouldn't start with you. He looked down at the child he carried. His face hardened. Then he said, in a very soft voice, Harry, sit. I'll be down in a minute. But it might, I'll see to it, he said in that same soft, gentle voice. It scared me. I sat down, and he took the child, walking softly, and vanished up the stairway. I sat for a moment in a big, comfortable, easy chair, the kind that rocks back and forth. There was a towel and a half-emptied bottle off to my left on the lamp table. Michael must have been rocking the little girl to sleep. Beside the bottle was a note. I leaned forward and picked it up, reading, Michael, don't want to wake you and the baby. Little one is demanding pizza and ice cream. I'll be back in a few minutes, probably before you wake up and read this. Love, Charity. I stood up and started toward the stairs. Michael appeared at the top of them, his face pale. Charity, he said. She's gone. I held up the note. She went to the store for pizza and ice cream. Pregnant cravings, I guess. Michael came down the stairs and brushed past me. He reached into the entry hall closet and pulled out a blue Levi jacket and amaracus in its black scabbard. What are you waiting for, Harry? Let's go find her. But your kids. Michael rolled his eyes, took a step to the door, and jerked it open without looking away from me. Father Forthill stood on the other side, his thinning hair wind-blown, his bright blue eyes surprised beneath his wire-rimmed spectacles. Oh, Michael, I didn't mean to stop by so late, but my car stalled only a block from here on the way back from taking Miss Hamish home, and I thought I might borrow... He paused, looking from me to Michael and then back to me again. You need a babysitter again, don't you? Michael shrugged into his jacket and slung the sword over his shoulder. They're already asleep. Do you mind? Father Forthill stepped in. Never. He made the cross over each of us again and murmured, God be with you. We started out of the house into Michael's truck. You see, Harry? I scowled. Handy fringe benefit. Michael drove, the big white truck rumbling down the local streets toward the corner grocery on Byron Street, within a long sprint of the famous Graceland Cemetery. The lowering clouds rumbled and started dumping a steady, heavy rain down onto the city, giving all the lights golden halos and casting ghostly reflections on the wet streets. This time of night, Michael said, Walsham is the only place open. She'll be there. Thunder rumbled again in growling punctuation to the statement. I drummed my fingers on my scorched staff and made sure that my blasting rod was hanging loosely by its thong around my wrist. That's her van, Michael said. He pulled the truck up into the row of parking spots in front of the grocery, next to the white Suburban troop transport. He barely took the time to take his keys with him, instead just snatching out amaracus and loosening the great blade in its sheath as he strode toward the store's front doors, his eyes narrowed, his jaw set. The rain pasted his hair down to his head after a few steps, soaking his Levi's jacket dark blue. I followed him, wincing at the damage to my leather duster, and reflecting that the old canvas job would have fared better in this weather. Michael slammed the heel of his hand into the door and swept it open with a jangling of tinny bells. He strode into the store, swept his eyes around the visible displays and the cash registers, and then bellowed, Charity, where are you? A couple of teenage cashiers blinked at him, and an elderly woman perusing the vitamins turned to gawk at him through her spectacles. I sighed, then nodded to the nearest cashier, a too skinny, too blonde girl who looked as though she were impatient for her cigarette break. Hi, I said. Did you see me come in here a minute ago? Or a pregnant woman, Michael said. About this high? He stuck his hand out flat about the level of his own ear. The female cashier traded a look with her counterpart. Seen you, mister? I nodded. Another guy, like me. Tall, skinny, all in black jacket like me, but all black clothes underneath. The girl licked her lips and gave us a calculating look. "Maybe I have," she said. "What's in it for me?" Michael rolled forward a step, a growl bubbling up out of his throat. I grabbed at his shoulder and leaned back. "Whoa, whoa, Michael," I yelped. "Slow down, man." "There isn't time to slow down," Michael muttered. "You detect, I'm looking." With that, he turned and strode off deeper into the store, casually carrying the sword in his left hand, his right upon the weapon's grip. "Charity!" I muttered something unflattering under my breath and turned back to the cashier. I fumbled in my pockets for my billfold and managed to produce a sorry trio of wrinkled fives. I held them up and said, "Okay, my evil twin or Elsa pregnant woman. You seen either one?" The girl looked at the bills and then back at me and rolled her eyes. Then she leaned out from her counter and plucked them from my hands. "Yeah," she said. "She went down aisle 5 a few minutes ago, back to the freezer section." "Yeah?" I asked. "Then what?" She smiled. "What? Is that your brother or something running around with your woman? Am I going to see this on Larry Fowler tomorrow?" I narrowed my eyes. "It's complicated," I said. "What else did you see?" She shrugged. "She paid for some stuff and went out to that van out there. It wouldn't start. I saw you, or the guy that looks like you, come up to her and start talking to her. She looked pretty pissed at him, but she walked off with him. I didn't think anything of it." My stomach gave a little lurch. "Walked off?" I said. "Which way?" The cashier shrugged. "Look, mister, she just looked like she was getting a ride somewhere. She wasn't fighting or nothing." "Which way?" I thundered. The cashier blinked. Her jaded exterior wobbled for a moment. She pointed down the street toward Graceland. "Michael!" I shouted. "Come on!" Then I turned around and banged my way back outside and into the rain and the dark. I stopped at Charity's van for a second and tapped at the hood. It wobbled up without resistance to reveal a mess of torn wires and shredded belts and broken pieces of metal. I winced and shielded my eyes from the rain, trying to scan down the street toward the cemetery. In the far distance, just barely, I saw two figures, one ungainly with long hair. The other stood tall over her, slender, walking toward the cemetery, holding her firmly by the hair. They vanished into the shadows at the base of the stone wall around Graceland. I gulped and looked around. "Michael!" I shouted again. I peered through the grocery's windows, but I couldn't see him anywhere. "Damn it!" I said and kicked the front bumper of the van. I was in no shape to go after the nightmare on my own. It was full of power it had stolen from me. It had the booga booga factor going for it, and it had my friend's wife and unborn child as hostages. Hell's bells. All I had was a headache, an hourglass quickly running out of sand and a case of the shakes. Chicago's biggest cemetery on a dark, rainy night, when the border between here and the spirit world is leaking like a sieve, it would be full of spooks and crawlies and I would be alone. "Yeah," I muttered. "That figures." I sprinted for the darkness into which I had seen the nightmare disappear with Charity. Chapter 21. I've done smarter things in my life. Once, for example, I threw myself out of a moving car in order to take on a truckload of lycanthropes single-handedly. That would have been nominally smarter. At least I would have been fairly certain that I could kill them, if I had to, at the time. Which put me one step ahead of where I was now. I had already killed the nightmare. Or helped to kill it, at least. Something about that just didn't seem fair. There should be some kind of rule against needing to kill anything more than once. Rain fell in sheets rather than drops, sluicing down into my eyes, and I had to keep on wiping my brow, sweeping water away, only to have it fill my vision again. I started to give serious thought to what it might have been like to drown, right there on the sidewalk. I cut across the street toward the cemetery fence. 7 feet of red brick, the fence rose in a jagged stair-step fashion every 100 feet or so, keeping up with the slow slope of the street along its southern perimeter as it moved west. At one point, a gaping slash of darkness marred the fence exterior, and I slowed as I approached it. The bricks had been torn like paper and lay in rubble 2 feet deep around the hole in the wall. I tried to peer beyond it and saw only more rain, green grass, and the shadows of the trees cast over the carefully tended grounds. I paused outside the graveyard. A dull, restless energy pressed against me, like when weariness and caffeine mix around 3:30 in the morning. It rolled against my skin, and I heard, actually heard, whispering voices through the rain. Dozens, hundreds of whispers, ghostly susurrants. I put my hand on the wall and felt the tension there. There were always fences around cemeteries. Always, whether stone or brick or chain. It's one of those unwritten things that people don't really notice. They just do it by reflex. Any kind of wall is a barrier in more than merely a physical sense. Lots of things are more than they seem in a purely physical sense. Walls keep things out. Walls around cemeteries keep things in. I looked back, hoping that Michael had followed me, but I didn't or couldn't see him in the rain. I still felt weak, shaken. The voices whispered, clustering around the weak point in the wall where the nightmare had torn its way in. Even if only one death in 1,000 had produced a ghost, and more than that did, there might be dozens of restless spirits wandering around the grounds, some even strong enough for non-practitioners of the art to experience. Tonight there weren't dozens. Dozens would have been a happier number. I closed my eyes and I could feel the power they stirred up, the way the air wavered and shook with the presence of hundreds of spirits, easily crossed over from the turbulent never-never. It made my knees shake, my belly quiver, both from the wounds that had been inflicted on me by the nightmare and from simple, primitive fear of darkness, the rain, and the place of the dead. The inmates of Graceland felt my fear. They pressed close to the break in the wall, and I began to hear actual, physical moans. "I should wait here," I muttered to myself, shaking in the rain. "I should wait for Michael. That would be the smart thing to do." Somewhere in the darkness of the cemetery, a woman screamed. "Charity. What I wouldn't give to have my dead man's talisman back now, son of a bitch." I gripped my staff, knuckles white, and got out my blasting rod. Then I clambered through the break in the wall and headed into the darkness. I felt them the moment I crossed into the cemetery. The second my shoes hit the ground, ghosts, shades, haunts, whatever you call them, they're dead as hell and they weren't going to take it anymore. They were weak spirits, each of them, something that would barely have given me a passing shiver on a normal night, but tonight wasn't. A chill fell over me, abrupt as winter's first wind. I took a step forward and felt a resistance, but not as though someone was trying to keep me out. It felt more like those movies I'd seen with tourists struggling through crowds of beggars in dusty Middle Eastern cities. That's what I experienced, in a chilling and spectral kind of way, people pushing against me, struggling to get something from me, something that I wasn't sure I had, and that I didn't think would do any good even if I gave it to them. I gathered in my will and slipped my mother's amulet from around my neck. I held it aloft in the smothering, clammy darkness and fed power to it. The blue wizard light began to glow, to cast out a dim radiance, not so bright as usual. The silver pentagram within the circle of the symbol of my faith, if that's what you wanted to call it, in magic. In the concept of power being controlled, ordered, used for constructive purpose. I wondered for a minute if the dimness was a reflection of my injuries or if it said something about my faith. I tried to think of how often I had to set something on fire the past few years. How many times I had to blow something up or smash a building or otherwise wreak havoc. I ran out of fingers and shivered. Maybe I'd better start being a little more careful. The spirits fell back from that light, but for a few who still clustered close, whispering things into my ears. I didn't pay any attention or stop to listen. That way lay madness. I shoved forward, more an effort of the heart than of the body, and started searching. "Charity!" I shouted. "Charity! Where are you?" I heard a short sound, a call, off to my right, but it cut off swiftly. I turned toward it and began moving forward at a cautious lope, glowing pentacle held aloft like Diogenes' lamp. Thunder rumbled again. The rain had already soaked the grass, made the dirt beneath my feet soft and yielding. A brief, disturbing image of the dead tearing their way up through the softened earth brought me a brief chill, and a dozen spirits clustered close, as though to feed from it. I shoved both fear and clutching, unseen fingers aside and pressed forward. I found Charity lying on a bier within a marble edifice that looked nothing so much as a Greek temple, the roof open to the sky. Michael's wife lay upon her back, her hands clutched over her swollen belly, her teeth bared in a snarl. The nightmare stood over her, with my dark hair plastered to its head, my dark eyes reflecting the gleam of my pentacle. It held one hand in the air over Charity's belly, its other over her throat. It tilted its head and watched me approach. In the edges of my wizard's light, shapes moved, flitted, spirits swirling around like moths. "Wizard," the nightmare said. "Demon," I responded. I wasn't feeling much like any snappy patter. It smiled, showing its teeth. "Is that what I am?" it said. "Interesting. I wasn't sure." It lifted its hand from Charity's throat, pointed a finger toward me, and murmured, "Goodbye, wizard." "Fuego." I felt the surge of power before any fire rose up and swept toward me through the rain. I lifted my staff in my left hand in front of me, horizontally, and slammed power recklessly into the shield. "Reflect them!" Fire and rain met in a furious hiss and a cloud of steam a foot in front of my outstretched staff. The rain helped, I think. I never would have been stupid enough to try for a gout of flame in a downpour like this. It was too easily defeated. Charity moved, the instant the nightmare's attention was distracted. She spun her feet toward it, and with a furious cry, planted both her heels high in the thing's chest with a vicious shove. Charity wasn't a weak woman. The thing grunted and flew back away from her, and at the same time the motion pushed Charity's body off the bier. She fell to the other side, crying out, curling her body around her unborn child to protect it. I sprinted forward. "Charity," I shouted, "get out! Run!" She turned her head toward me, and I saw how furious she was. She bared her teeth at me for a moment, but her face clouded with confusion. "Dresden?" she said. "No time!" I shouted. On the other side of the bier, the nightmare rose to its feet again, dark eyes gone now, instead blazing with scarlet fury. I didn't have time to think about it, running forward. "Run, Charity!" I knew it would be suicide to wrestle with something that had torn down a brick wall a few minutes ago, but I had a sinking feeling that I was outclassed in the magic department. If he got another spell off, I didn't think I could counter it. I held my staff in both hands, planted it at the base of the bier, and vaulted up, swinging my feet toward the nightmare's face. I had speed and surprise on my side. I hit it hard, and it staggered back. My staff spun out of my hands and my hips struck painfully on the edge of the bier and scraped along my ribs as I continued forward, riding the thing onto the marble floor. My concentration gone, the blue wizard light died out, and I fell in darkness. I hit the ground with a wheeze and scrambled back. If the nightmare got a hold of me, that would be it. I had just reached the edge of the bier when something seized my leg, right below the knee, a grip like an iron band around me. I struggled to draw myself back, but there was nothing to grab onto but the rain-slickened marble. The nightmare stood up, and a flash of lightning somewhere overhead showed me its dark eyes, its face like mine. It was smiling. "And so it ends, wizard," he said. "I am rid of thee at last." I tried to get away, but the nightmare simply whirled me by one leg, whipped me into a circle in the air, then I flew upwards and saw one of the columns coming toward me. Then there was a flash of light and a sharp pain in the center of my forehead. The impact with the ground came as a secondary sensation, relatively pleasant compared with the first. Unconsciousness would have been a mercy. Cold rain instead kept me awake enough to experience every agonizing second of expanding pain in my skull. I tried to move my limbs and couldn't, and for a second I thought that my neck must have been broken. Then, in the corner of my vision, I saw my fingers twitch and thought with a flash of desperation that I wasn't out of the fight yet. A major effort got my hand down onto the ground. Another major effort pushed me up and made my head spin, my stomach heave. I leaned back against the column, gasping for breath through the rain, and tried to gather my strength. It didn't take long. There just wasn't all that much strength left to gather. I opened my eyes, slowly focused them. I felt a sharp tang in my mouth. I touched my hand to my mouth, my cheek, and my fingers came away stained with something warm and dark. Blood. I tried to rise up and couldn't. Just couldn't. Everything spun too much. Water coursed down over me, chilling me, pooling at the base of the little hill the Greek temple cum mausoleum stood upon, running a stream down toward another creek. "So much water," purred a female voice beside me. "So many things flowing down, away. I wonder if some of them are not being wasted." I rolled my head enough to see my godmother standing beside me in her green dress. Leah's skin had evidently recovered from the ghost dust I'd dumped upon her in Agatha Hagglethorne's Demoiselle. Her golden cat eyes studied me with their old familiar warmth, her hair spilling around her and a mane that seemed unaffected by the rain. She didn't seem to mind it soaking her dress, though. It clung to the curves of her body, showed the perfection of her breasts, their tips clearly showing through the silken fabric as she knelt down beside me. "What are you doing here?" I muttered. She smiled, reached out a finger, and ran it over my forehead, then drew it back to her mouth and slipped it between her lips and suckled gently upon it. Her eyes closed, and she let out a long and shivering sigh. "Such a sweet boy. You always were such a sweet boy." I tried to push myself to my feet and couldn't. Something in my head seemed broken. She watched me with that same benign smile. "Thy strength is fading, my sweet. Here in the place of the dead, it may fail thee altogether."
"This isn't the never-never, godmother," I rasped. "You don't have any power here."
She pursed her lips in what would have been a seductive pout on a human. My blood had stained them even darker.
"My sweet, you know it's not true. I simply only have what I am given here, what I have fairly traded for."
I bared my teeth at her.
"You're gonna kill me then?"
She drew back her head in a rich laugh.
"Kill you? I never intended to kill you, my sweet. Barring moments of frustration. Our bargain was for your life, not your death."
One of her hounds appeared out of the darkness and crouched beside her, fastening its dark eyes upon me. She laid a fond hand upon its broad head and shivered in pleasure. I found myself growing colder at that, staring at the hound.
"You don't want me dead. You want me..."
I couldn't finish the sentence.
"Tamed," Leah smiled. She scratched the dog's ears fondly. "But not like this."
Her mouth twisted into a contemptuous smirk.
"Not as you are. Pathetic. Really, Harry, allowing yourself to be eaten so. Justin and I taught you better than that."
Somewhere close, Charity shouted again. Thunder rolled overhead. I groaned and struggled to push myself up. Leah watched me through golden, cat-slitted eyes, interested and uncaring. I managed to get to my feet, my back and most of my weight leaning against the column. In the rain, I could dimly see Charity on her knees. The nightmare stood over her, one hand clutching her hair. It pushed the other toward her head. She fought it, uselessly, shuddering in the rain. Its fingers sunk into her skull, and Charity's struggles abruptly ceased. I groaned and pushed myself forward to get closer, to do something. Everything spun around, and I fell to the earth again, hard.
"Sweet boy," Leah sighed. "Poor child."
She knelt down beside me again and stroked my hair. It felt nice through my nausea and pain. I think the nausea and pain definitely cut down on the seductive potential of it, though.
"Would you like me to help you?"
I managed to look up at her lovely face.
"Help me?"
I asked.
"How?"
Her eyes sparkled.
"I can give you what you need to save the White Knight's lady."
I stared up at her. All the pain, the terror, the stupid, rainy cold made me ache horribly. And I heard Charity whimper.
"I had tried. Damn it, I'd done my best to help this woman. She didn't even like me. It wasn't my fault if she died, right? I had done everything in my power. Hadn't I?
I swallowed down the sickly taste of bile and acid and asked, "What do you want, Godmother?" She shivered and drew in a swift breath.
"What I have always wanted, dear boy. This bargain is no different than the one we made years ago. It is, in fact, a part of the same. I give you power, and in return, I get you." Her eyes flashed. "I want your promise, wizard. I want your promise that when the woman is safe, you will come to me. You will take my hand. Here, tonight."
"You want me to go back with you," I whispered. "But you don't want me like this, Godmother. All torn up. I'm empty inside."
She smiled and stroked the hellhound's head. "Yes, in time you will heal.
And I will make that time pass swiftly, my sweet." She leaned closer to me, golden eyes burning.
"Such pleasures I could teach you. No man could wish for a merrier passing."
She looked up again, over the bier that hid my view of Charity and the nightmare.
"The White Knight's lady sees such things now. Soon she will be trapped, as is the policewoman."
"How did you know about Murphy?" I demanded.
"I know so many things. I know that you may die if you do nothing, my sweet. You may die here, cold and alone."
"I don't care about that," I said.
Charity let out a choking, sobbing sound nearby. Leah smiled and murmured, "Time is fleeting, child. It waits for no one, not man or cheed or wizard."
Leah already had me over a barrel. If I deepened our pact, reconfirmed it, I'd be letting her nail it closed with me inside. But I couldn't get up. I couldn't do a damn thing to save Charity without getting some help. I closed my eyes and saw Michael's little daughter, and thought of her growing up without a mother.
"Damn it. I accept your bargain, Godmother."
When I spoke the words, I felt something stir against me, something that sealed closed. Leah gasped, eyes closing as she shuddered again, then opening with a feral glow. She leaned down and murmured,
"The answer, my sweet, is all around you."
Then she kissed my forehead and was gone in a flicker of shadows. I found myself thinking clearly again. It still hurt to move. Stars, it hurt, but I managed it. I clambered to my feet, leaning against the bier, and looked up to let the rain wash the blood from my eyes. The answer was all around me. What the hell kind of idiotic advice was that? I glared around, but saw nothing but rolling lawns, trees, and graves. Lots of graves. Plain tombstones and marble markers. Graves with ponds beside them. Graves with lights. Graves with small fountains. Dead people. That's what was all around. I focused my eyes on Charity in the nightmare and felt cold anger inside. I moved around the edge of the bier, gaining a little stability and balanced as I went, and shouted, "Hey, you, ugly!" The nightmare turned its head to blink in my direction, surprised. Then it smiled again and said, "Thou art not yet dead. How interesting." It released Charity, fingers gliding out of her as they had from Murphy, and she fell limply to her side. "I can finish that one at leisure. But thou, wizard, I will make an end to at once."
"Yada, yada, yada," I muttered.
I bent down and recovered my staff, standing again with it in both hands. "People don't talk like that anymore. All those thous and these. Hell's bells, at least the fairies keep up with the dialect."
The nightmare frowned at me and started walking toward me. "Dost thou not realize it, fool? This is thy death come upon thee."
A boot planted itself heavily on the marble beside me, then another. Amarakis cast a glowing white light upon my shoulder, and Michael said, "I think not." I glanced aside at Michael.
"You," I groaned, "have very good timing."
He bared his teeth in an unpleasant, fierce expression.
"My wife?" "She's alive," I said, "but we better get her out of here."
he nodded. "I'll kill it again," he said. He passed me something hard and cool, a crucifix. "Get to her. Give her this." The nightmare came to a halt, its eyes narrowing upon the pair of us. "Thou," it said to Michael. "I knew it would come to this." "Oh, shut up," I shouted, exasperated. "Michael, kill this thing already." Michael started forward, the sword's white fire lighting the night like a halogen torch. The nightmare screamed in fury and threw itself to one side, avoiding the blade, then rushed back in toward Michael, fingers raking like claws. Michael ducked under them, planted his shoulder in the thing's gut and shoved it away, spun and whipped the sword at it. Amarakis cut into the nightmare's midsection, and a white fire erupted from the wound. I hurried forward around Michael's back to Charity. Already she was stirring, trying to sit up. "Dresden," she whispered to me. "My husband?" "He's busy kicking ass," I said, and pressed the crucifix into her fingers. "Here, take this. Can you walk?" "Mind your tongue, Mr. Dresden," she grasped the crucifix and bowed her head for a second. "I don't know," she said. "Oh, Lord, help me, I think." Her whole body tightened, and she let out a low gasp, pressing her hand against her belly. "What?" I said. Had she been injured? Behind me, I could hear Michael grunting, see the sweep of Amarakis's white fire making shadows dance. "Charity, what is it?" She let out a low groan.
"The baby," she said. "Oh, I think my water broke earlier when I fell."
Her face twisted up, flushing bright red, and she groaned again. "Oh," I said. "Oh. Oh, no. No, this is not happening." I put the heel of my hand to my forehead. "This is just wrong." I shot an accusing glance skyward. "Someone up there has a sick sense of humor."
"Oh!"
Charity groaned.
"Oh, Lord preserve, Mr. Dresden, I don't have much time."
"No," I sighed, "naturally not." I bent down to pick her up and all but fell on my face. I managed to keep from sprawling onto her, but wobbled as I stood up again. Charity was not a dainty flower. There was no way I could carry her out of there. "Michael," I shouted. "Michael, we've got a problem." Michael threw himself behind one of the biers as a stone whistled out of the darkness and shattered to powder against it. "What?" "Charity," I shouted. "Her baby's coming." "Harry," Michael shouted. "Look out." I turned and the nightmare appeared from the darkness behind me, moving almost more swiftly than I could see. It reached down and simply tore a marble headstone from the earth, lifting it high. I threw myself between it and Charity, but even as I did, I knew it would be a futile gesture. It was strong enough to crush her right through me, but I did it anyway. "Now," screamed the nightmare, "put down your sword, knight. Put it down, or I crush them both." Michael started towards us, his face pale. "Not a step closer," the nightmare snarled. "Not an inch." Michael stopped. He stared at Charity, who groaned again, panting, eyes forced shut. "Harry," he said. I could get out of the thing's way. I could draw its fire, maybe. But if I moved, it could simply crush Charity. She'd have no chance at all. "The sword," the nightmare said, voice cool. "Drop it." "Oh, Lord," Michael whispered.
"Don't do it, Michael," I said. "It's only going to kill us anyway."
"Thou be silent," the nightmare said. "My quarrel is with thee, wizard, and with the knight. The woman and her child are nothing to me, so long as I have both of you." Rain sleeted down for a long and otherwise silent moment. Then Michael closed his eyes. "Harry," he said. He lowered the great sword, then gave it a gentle toss to one side, letting it fall on the ground. "I'm sorry. I can't do it." The nightmare met my eyes with its own, glowing, faint scarlet, and its lips curled up into a gleeful smile. "Wizard," it said in a whisper, "thy friend should have listened to thee." And I saw the gravestone start to come down toward me. Charity's arm abruptly swept up, the crucifix I passed to her held in it. The symbol flickered and then kindled with white fire
that threw harsh horror movie shadows up over the nightmare's face. It twisted and recoiled from that light, screaming, and the tombstone crashed down to earth, rending the damp, vulnerable soil. Everything slowed down and came into crystalline focus. I could clearly see the grounds, the shadows of the trees. I could hear Charity beside me uttering something in harsh Latin. And out of the corner of my eye, I could see the restless shades moving about the cemetery. I could feel the cold sharpness of the rain, feel it coursing down over me, flowing down the gentle slopes to run in rivulets and streams to a nearby pond. Running water. The answer was all around me. I moved forward, toward the nightmare. It swung at me with one flailing arm, and I felt it clip my shoulder as it went down. I threw myself into the nightmare's body, hit it hard. We tumbled together down the slope, toward the newly forming stream. Have you ever heard of the legend of Sleepy Hollow? Remember the part with the poor old Ichabod riding like blazes for the covered bridge in safety? Running water grounds magical energies. Creatures of the never-never, spirit bodies, cannot cross it without losing all the energy required to keep those bodies here. That was the answer. I rolled down the slope with the nightmare and felt its hands tearing at me. We went down into the stream together as one of its hands clenched at my throat and shut off my breath. And then it began to scream. It jerked and twisted atop me in 8 or 9 inches of running water, shrieking. The thing's body just started melting away, like sugar in water, starting at its feet and moving up. I watched it, watched myself dissolve with a morbid kind of fascination. It wreathed, it bucked, it thrashed. "Wizard," it said, voice bubbling. "This is not over, not over. When the sun sets again, wizard, I will be back for thee." "Melt already," I mumbled. And seconds later, the nightmare vanished, leaving only sticky goo behind on my coat, my throat. I stood up out of the water, drenched and shivering, and slogged my way back up the little hill. Michael had gone to his wife and crouched down beside her, got his arms underneath her and lifted her as though she were a basket of laundry. Like I said before, Michael's buff. "Harry," he said, "the sword." "I got it," I replied. I trudged up to where he'd let Amarakis fall and picked it up. The great blade weighed less than I would have thought. It fairly hummed with power, vibrating in my fingers. I didn't have a sheath for it, so I just slung it up on one shoulder and hoped I wouldn't fall and cut my head off or something. I recovered my other stuff, too, and turned to walk out with Michael. That was when Leah arrived, appearing before me with a trio of her hellhounds around her. "My sweet," she said, "it is time to fulfill your bargain." I yelped and jumped back from her. "No," I said, "no. Wait, I beat this thing, but it's still loose. It will be able to come back from the never-never tomorrow night." "That is of no concern to me," she said, and shrugged. "Our bargain was for you to save the woman, and that is what I gave you." "You didn't give me anything," I said. "You just blanked out some of the pain. It isn't as though you made the water, Godmother." She shrugged, smiling. "Semantics. I pointed it out to you, did I not?" "I would have realized it on my own," I said. "Perhaps, but we have a bargain." She lowered her face, eyes gleaming, cold and dangerous. "Are you going to attempt to escape it once more?" I've given my word, and broken promises add up to trouble. But the nightmare hadn't been defeated. Driven back, sure, but it would only be back the next night. "I'll go with you," I said, "when I've beaten the nightmare." "You'll go now," Leah smiled, "this instant, or pay the price." The three hellhounds took a pace toward me, baring their teeth in a silent snarl. I fumbled everything out of my grasp but the sword, and gripped it tightly. I don't know a thing about broadswords, but it was heavy and sharp, and even without its vast power, I was pretty sure I could stick the pointy part into one of those hounds. "I can't do that," I said. "Not yet." "Harry,"
Michael shouted. Wait! It can't be used like that!
One of the hounds leapt toward me. I lifted the blade, and there was a flash of light and a jolt of pain that lanced up through my hands and arms. The blade twisted in my grasp, fell out of it, and spun to the ground. The hellhound snapped at me. I stumbled back, my hands gone numb and useless. Leah's laughter rang out through the graves like silver bells.
Yes, she caroled, stepping forward.
She bent and with a casual motion picked up the great sword.
I knew you would try to cheat me again, dear boy.
She smiled at me, a flash of dainty canines.
I must thank you, Harry. I would never have been able to touch this had not the one who held it betrayed its purpose.
I felt a flash of anger at my own stupidity.
No, I stammered. Wait, can't we talk about this, Godmother?
We'll talk again, sweet boy, and I'll see you both very soon.
Leah laughed again, eyes gleaming. And then she turned, her hellhounds gathering at her feet, and took a step forward, vanishing into the night. The sword went with her. I stood there in the rain, feeling tired and cold and stupid. Michael stared at me for a second, his expression shocked, eyes wide. Charity curled against him, shuddering and moaning quietly. Harry, Michael whispered. I think he was crying, but I couldn't see the tears in the rain.
Oh, my God. What have you done?
Chapter 22. All hospital emergency rooms have the same feel to them. They're all decorated in the same dull, muted tones and softened edges, which are meant to be comforting and aren't. They all have the same smell, too. One part tangy antiseptics, one part cool dispassion, one part anxiety, and one part naked fear. They wheeled Charity away first, Michael at her side. Triage being what it was, I got bumped to the front of the line. I felt like apologizing to the 5-year-old girl holding a broken arm. Sorry, honey. Head trauma before fractured limbs. The doctor who examined me wore a nameplate that read Simons. She was broadly built and tough-looking, her hair going gray in sharp contrast to her rich, dark skin. She sat down on a stool in front of me and leaned over, putting her hands on either side of my head. They were large, warm, strong. I closed my eyes.
How are you feeling?
She asked, releasing me after a moment, and reached for some supplies on the table next to her. Like a supervillain just threw me into a wall. She let out a soft chuckle.
More specifically, are you in pain? Dizzy? Nauseous?
Yes and no, and a little.
You hit your head?
Yeah. I felt her start to dab my forehead with a cold cloth, cleaning off grime and dried blood, though there wasn't much left, thanks to the rain.
Well, there's some blood here. Are you sure it's yours?
I opened my eyes and blinked at her.
Mine? Whose else would it be?
The doctor lifted an eyebrow at me, dark eyes glittering from behind her glasses.
You tell me, mister.
She checked her charts.
Dresden?
She frowned and then peered up at me.
Harry Dresden? The wizard?
I blinked.
I'm not really famous, despite being the only wizard in the phone book. I'm more infamous. People don't tend to spontaneously recognize my name.
Yeah, that's me. She frowned.
I see. I've heard of you.
Anything good?
Not really.
She let out a cross sigh.
There's no cut here. I don't appreciate jokes, Mr. Dresden. There are people in need to attend to.
I felt my mouth drop open.
No cut?
But there had been a nice flowing gash in my head at some point, pouring blood into my eyes and mouth. I could still taste some of it, almost. How could it have vanished? I thought of the answer and shivered.
Godmother. No cut, she said. Something that might have been a cut a few months ago.
That's impossible, I said, more to myself than to her. That just can't be. She shone a light at my eyes. I winced. She peered at each eye, mechanically, professionally,
without the intimacy that triggers a soul gaze, and shook her head. If you've got a concussion, I'm Winona Ryder. Get off that bed and get out of here. Make sure to talk to the cashier on the way out. She pressed a moist towelette into my hand. I'll let you clean up this mess, Mr. Dresden. I've got enough work to do. But you shouldn't come into the emergency room unless it's absolutely necessary. But I didn't... Dr. Simons didn't stop and listen to me. She turned around and strode off over to the next patient, the little girl with the broken arm. I got up and made my bruised way into the bathroom. My face was a mess of faint, dried blood. It had settled mostly into the lines and creases, making me look older, a mask of blood and age. I shivered and started cleaning myself off, trying to keep my hands from shaking. I felt scared. Really, honestly scared. I would have been much happier to have needed stitches and painkillers. I wiped away blood and peered at my forehead. There was a faint pink line beginning about an inch below my hair and slashing up into it at an angle. It felt very tender, and when I accidentally touched it with the rag, it hurt so much that I almost shouted, but the wound was closed, healed. Magic. My godmother's magic. That kiss on the forehead had closed the wound. If you think I should have been happy about getting a nasty cut closed up, then you probably don't realize the implications. Working magic directly on a human body is difficult. It's very difficult. Conjuring up forces like my shield or elemental manifestations like fire or wind is a snap compared to the complexity and power required to change someone's hair a different color, or to cause the cells on either side of an injury to fuse back together, closing it. The healing cut was a message for me. My godmother had power over me on Earth now, too, as well as in the Never Never. I'd made a bargain with one of the Fae and broken it. That gave her power over me, which she demonstrated aptly by the way she'd wrought such a powerful and complex working on me, and I never even felt it happening. That was the part that scared me. I'd always known that Leah had outclassed me. She was a creature with 1,000 years or more of experience, knowledge, and she had been born to magic like I had been born to breathing. So long as I remained in the real world, though, she had no advantage over me. Our world was a foreign place to her, just as hers was to me. I'd had the home field advantage. Had being the operative word. Had. Hell's bells. I gave up and let my hands shake while I wiped off my face. I had a good reason to be afraid. Besides, my clothes were soaked from the rain and I felt desperately cold. I finished washing the blood away and went to stand in front of the electric hand dryer. I had to slam the button 12 times before it started. I had the nozzle of the thing turned up, directing the hot air up my shirt when Stallings came in, sans, for once, Rudolph. He looked as though he hadn't slept since I'd seen him last. His suit was rumpled, his gray hair a little grayer, and his mustache was almost the same color as the bags underneath his eyes. He went to the sink and splashed cold water on his face without looking at me. "Dresden," he said, "we got word you were in the hospital." "Hey, John. How's Murphy?" "She slept. We just brought her in." I blinked at him. "Christ, is it dawn already?" "About 20 minutes ago." He moved over to the dryer next to mine. His started on the first slap of the button. "She's sleeping still. The docs are arguing about whether she's in a coma or on some kind of drug." "You tell them what happened?" I asked. He snorted. "Yeah. I'll just tell them that a wizard put her under a spell and she's sleepy." He glanced over at me. "So when is she going to wake up?" I shook my head. "My spell won't hold her for long, maybe a couple more days at the most. Each time the sun comes up, it's going to degrade a little more." "What happens then?" "She starts screaming. Unless I find the thing that got her and figure out how to undo what it did." "That's what you want Kravos's book for?" Stallings said. I nodded. "Yeah." He reached into his pocket and produced the book. A little journal, thick, but not broad, bound in dark leather. It was sealed in a plastic evidence bag. I reached for it, but Stallings pulled it away. Dresden, if you touch this, if you open it up, you're going to be leaving your prints on it, skin cells, all sorts of things, unless it disappears. I frowned at him. What's the big deal? Kravos is all but put away, right? Hell, we caught him with a murder weapon, with the body at the scene. There isn't anything in the journal to beat that, is there? He grimaced. If it was just his trial, that wouldn't be a problem. What do you mean? He shook his head. Inside shit. I can't talk about it. But if you take this book, Dresden, it's got to vanish. Fine, I said, reaching for it. It's gone. He pulled it away again. I mean it. Promise. Something about the quiet intensity of his words touched me. All right, I said. I promise. He stared at the book for a second, then slapped it into my palm. Hell with it, he said. If you can help Murphy, do it. John, I said. Hey, man, if I didn't think I needed it... What's going on here? Internal affairs, Stallings said. Looking at SI again? Don't they have anything better to do? What set them off this time? Nothing, Stallings lied. He turned to go. John, I said. What aren't you telling me here? He paused at the door and grimaced. They're interested in the Kravos case. That's all I can say. You should hear word in the next day or so. You'll know it when you hear it. Wait, I said. Something happened to Kravos? I gotta go, Harry. Good luck. Wait, Stallings! He headed out the door. I cursed and started after him, but he lost me. I wound up standing in the hallway, shivering like a wet puppy. Damn it. Cops were tight. Special kind of brotherhood. They'd work with you, but if you weren't a cop, you were on the outside in a billion subtle ways. One of which was they didn't let you in on the department's secrets. What could have happened to Kravos? Something serious. Hell, maybe the nightmare had taken out a little vengeance on him as well, as long as it was out and about. Served him right, though, if it had happened. I stood there for a minute, trying to work out what to do. I had no money on me, no car, no way to get either. I needed Michael. I asked someone for directions and headed for maternity. I took a long route around, staying away from anything that looked technical or expensive. The last thing I wanted to do was blow up Grandma's iron lung. I found Michael standing in the hallway. His hair had dried, all curled and mussed. There seemed to be more gray in it this way than usual. His beard had a rough, untrimmed look to it. His eyes were sunken. Mud spattered his boots and his jeans to the knee. Amaracus's black scabbard hung over his shoulder, empty. Michael stood in front of a big picture window. Rows of little people in rolling cradles faced the window, heating lamps making sure they didn't get the chills. I stood there quietly with him, looking at the babies for a time. A nurse looked up and then did a double take, staring at us, before hurrying out of the room. Aha, I said. That nurse recognizes us. I didn't realize we were back down in Cook County. Didn't recognize the place without something being on fire. Charity's doctor is here. Uh-huh, I said. So, which one is the newest little carpenter? Michael remained silent. I got a sick little feeling and glanced aside at him. Michael? When he spoke, his voice was exhausted, numb. The labor was complicated. She was cold and might have been getting sick with something. Her water did break back at the graveyard. I guess it makes it a lot harder on the baby. I just listened to him, feeling sicker. They had to go ahead and do a C-section, but they think there might be damage. She got hit in the stomach at one point, they think. They don't know if she'll be able to have children again. The baby? Silence. Michael? He stared at the infants and said, "The doctor says that if he lasts 36 hours, he might have a chance. But he's weakening. They're doing everything they can."